thank you. I just this is Wally Tyner from Purdue, and I just wanted to respond to several of the comments and questions that have been raised. First of all, before I do that, though, I should say that what's been presented today is really CARB's work and not Purdue's work. Purdue's work has entered into it in many ways, but it is not something that Purdue has developed. CARB developed this presentation entirely on their own. We saw it at the same time everybody else saw it. So let me just go through a few points. The first is that many of the red issues that were raised at the beginning from the working group as issues that haven't been addressed actually have been addressed, or been addressed partially at least, and so there has been a good bit of work done on that. Point two is that the suggestion that there's little uncertainty in emission factors, I think, is a bit misleading, because we published a paper where we showed that, yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty in land use change, but there's also a lot of uncertainty in emission factors. Maybe there's not in that model as it's currently configured, but if you go broader and look at a range of models, there's a lot of uncertainty in emission factors. The main point I want to make is that the yield price elasticity slides 24 to 26 are basically just incorrect. The yield price elasticity is a medium-term elasticity, as was indicated, and we normally think of that as about 8 years. So it's hard to imagine that if the return over variable cost, and that's another problem there, is the yield price elasticity is the change in yield with respect to a change in return over variable cost. And it's only for the intensive margin and not for the extensive margin. There's no such thing as an endogenous and an exogenous if you measure it correctly. So I think that whole discussion was misleading, and I wouldn't want people to leave thinking that that represents sort of the state of the art. I personally think, and our group thinks, that any of those papers in the literature that represent 1 year are totally irrelevant to this. They may be fine for a one-year estimate, but a one-year estimate is totally irrelevant. And mostly the annual or short-term estimates were very low, and most of the medium-term were much higher, in the range of the 0.25 that we currently use. The Armington discussion was partially accurate and partially not. The initial shares are fixed, but shares do change and can change over time. They change less in an Armington structure than they do in a Heckscher-Ohlin structure, but they can change. One reason the changes are small is that the shocks, even a large ethanol shock, is small relative to the size of the global economy. So it's not large enough of a shock economically to induce very large changes in the shares. But as was indicated, whether you go entirely with Heckscher-Ohlin or entirely with Armington, and we've tested that, doesn't change things much. It changes where some of the land use changes occur, but not the magnitude of them. The DDGS comparison is something that's really not appropriate to do, because there's so many things, as Steve indicated, that determined trade. We've done shocks, shocking biofuels and shocking Chinese soybean demand at the same time, and you get a much more accurate picture. But if you shock only ethanol, you're not going to get an accurate picture of what happens with DDGS trade. For example, the European Union doesn't have a tariff on DDGS, so it's natural that they're going to import a lot more of that than other feedstuffs. And the forestry issue, it's a tough issue. Currently in the model, forestry is accessible or inaccessible, and only accessible forest is allowed to be used, and accessible forest can be either managed or unmanaged. The problem is that we don't have data on what share of accessible forest is managed and what's unmanaged. But if we had that data, we could certainly do something with it, but the data doesn't exist. So if we do address that issue, it's going to be addressed with very sparse data, at least at this point. So those are just some, there are a lot of other things we could talk about, but those were just some key points. I want to make sure that it's clear that we provided a lot of the input to CARB in this. They accepted some, they rejected other. I think they have made a lot of progress, but I wanted to make it clear that this is CARB's work, this presentation, and not Purdue's work. Thank you.
I would like to respond to this, Wally. We already had numerous discussions about all the issues that you brought up, and we appreciate your comments. And the last discussion we had it today in the morning. But anyway, coming back into the issues that you brought up, you talked about price yield elasticities. We are aware about that you would like to use just one value for price yield elasticity. Yes, and you want your thoughts are and your analysis indicates that that's the only value that should be used, and you disagree with some of the other analyses. We believe that the value that you have is one of the values that we have from the information that we have so far. We reviewed different information from literature and tell us that in reality it's not appropriate for the reasons that I mentioned to you earlier that we should use just one value. Because for one thing, you don't have the knowledge to develop different price yield elasticity for different crops, for different locations. Therefore, the use of one price yield elasticity, it would be inappropriate, could be resulting in inappropriate results.
So I didn't say anything about one elasticity. I said that we ought to use appropriate elasticities, and I completely agree that we need a range. The range needs to be appropriate. That's what the other commenters have said as well.
Right, but the appropriate values that we have used, the range that we have used is between 0.5 and 0.3, which we thought that is the most appropriate values that we should use. Now, in regards to the endogenous or exogenous price yield elasticity, as you are aware, we had extensive discussions on this issue because we were really surprised and we could not give any good explanation ever why the endogenous yield elasticity exists there. Because we see a price change into the model, and when we compare the results before and after that, we see that there is a price yield elasticity effect. And the only explanation that we could figure out about that, that is the result of double cropping, intensification, or other reasons, but this is an integral part of the model. And therefore, we accepted that as being part of the model. And therefore, we said, all right, we're going to accept that. And as some people pointed here, if you're going to account for both endogenous and exogenous, then in reality, the range is not going to be 0.05 to 0.3. The range is going to be probably 0.15 to about 0.35, 0.4. So we took the most appropriate information that we could get, and we basically make a decision to use the range that we have. Now, you talked about the issue of Armington elasticity. We understand that. We understand the limitations associated with Armington elasticity. We had numerous discussions about this issue. We tried to understand what it is and what the effects of that are going to be. And I believe to some extent we agree. We don't make any changes on Armington elasticity. We accept it as it is, although we understand that there might be shortcomings, and we understand if we move to a dynamic model, then definitely probably that is going to be the solution to the issue. Talking about the forestry and the managed and unmanaged forest, we understand, and we have discussed that for months back and forth. We have numerous constructive discussions with you and Farzad about the issue of managed versus unmanaged forest and where the data are. And we understand the shortcomings of that. We understand that it's going to be accessible versus inaccessible land into the model, but the accessible, inaccessible land in the model does not address the issue of managed versus unmanaged and does not address the issue of forestry sector effects. And we saw, and we recognize that, and I believe you recognize that you see significant, if we assume that, you see significant reforestation effects in many parts in the world that new forest grows, and there is no data to indicate that that's happened. Nowhere. So in reality, we had to go back and make adjustments on that to accommodate that issue by making adjustments to the ETL values till we have the opportunity to do work and be able to collect data, to be able to use the data to accommodate, to be able basically to improve the model by including managed versus unmanaged forest. So for certain issues here, I believe we are taking the best approach that we can do by trying to improve the model as much as we can do, taking the best information that's available, the latest information that's available, and we try to accommodate this in the analysis that we are doing. And the final decision is that we don't have any final values yet, and we hope that people that are going to be able to provide us data, provide us feedback, and we're going to be able to go back, hopefully working together to see what additional improvements to the model we're going to be able to make.
That's fine, John. I just wanted to be on record and make it clear that this is your decisions and not ours, and the decision is yours, of course. But I just wanted to make it clear that there are points in this that we agree and points in which we disagree.
Yeah, but one of the things I'm going to say, it's not a decision that we are making specifically at this time. What we're looking at this time, we're looking at possible range of values. That's what we're looking at, preliminary data, and try to account into this analysis the best information that is available at this time.
That's what we all want.
So that's what we're trying to do, and you're aware that that's has been my intent all the way through the time that we've been working together. And that is our approach to this thing. And I'm not saying we know the absolute truth. We have a lot of limitations in data, and we have to do, and a lot of elements into the model, they are built based on assumptions, based on judgment. We recognize that because there are no data available there, but we try to improve all this as much as we can based on the information that we have. And I'm sure that additional information will become available in the future, and we'll be able to further improve the model.